Yeah, Katie Lang. That was Don't Be a Lemming Polka from Even Cowgirls Get the Blues soundtrack. And before that, we heard Adolf Hoffner doing the Happy-Go-Lucky Polka from the Dance-O-Rama Decca series, which I just, 14 EPs, I just finally completed. Thanks to everybody who called in and for joining in on the Polkabilly Polkabration today. Happy 30th anniversary to the polka in Wisconsin. And please stay tuned for a public affair coming up next. But first, the BBC.
Chandler with the BBC News. The political leader of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, says three of his sons and several grandchildren have been killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza City. Sebastian Usher has sent us this report.
Hamas says that the car that Ismail Haniyeh's sons were travelling in was hit in Ashati camp in Gaza. Mr. Haniyeh heard the news as he was visiting wounded Gazans who'd been taken for treatment to the Qatari capital Doha, which is where the Hamas leader lives. His response was to thank God for the honour bestowed on him with what he called the martyrdom of his children and grandchildren. He also said that the killings would not change Hamas's position in the current ceasefire talks. There has as yet been no comment from the Israeli army or government.
Across Gaza, Palestinians have been marking Eid in the midst of the devastation caused by 6 months of war. With famine looming and most of the population displaced, few have been able to hold traditional celebrations. The European Parliament has approved a sweeping reform of the EU's migration and asylum rules. They will establish border centres to hold irregular migrants while their requests are vetted. Poland said it wouldn't join the migrant relocation mechanism. Here's Nick Beek.
The hope is from the people who've put this forward that there will be more of a sharing of responsibility, whether that's in taking in people who arrive in Europe or money being sent towards this new EU fund that's being set up. And in short, the promise is to have these border centres set up so that people can be processed, and also a speeding up of the system so that if people do not have their asylum application approved, they will be sent back to their country of origin much sooner.
America's top general in Europe says Ukraine will run out of artillery shells and air defence interceptors fairly soon without US support. The Republican House Speaker is refusing to call a vote on a bill that would provide $60 billion for Ukraine. General Christopher Cavoli told the House Armed Services Committee, without US support, Ukraine could face a partial or total defeat. President Biden has described the alliance between America and Japan as a cornerstone of peace, security and prosperity in the Indo-Pacific region. Mr. Biden made the comments in the White House to the visiting Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida.
Today, our economic relationship is one of the strongest and deepest in the world. Our democracies are beacons of freedom, shining across the globe.
The talks between the two leaders are expected to focus on increased cooperation to deter possible aggression from China. The two leaders are due to announce more than 70 initiatives as part of a defense partnership. Among them are changes to the US military's command structure in Japan to improve its ability to work together with Japanese armed forces during a crisis. World News from the BBC. Reports from India say the Taliban administration in Afghanistan has started returning private land to the minority Hindu and Sikh communities after reclaiming them from warlords. This came after a meeting between Afghan Sikhs and the Taliban Justice Ministry last month. The reports say that a commission has been formed to oversee the return of land. The Justice Minister has asked the Sikh delegation to provide a detailed list of the properties in question. Vietnam says it will build two high-speed rail lines linking its capital Hanoi with China. Officials are aiming to start construction within the next 6 years. Earlier this month, state media said that rail project would cost up to $72 billion, approximately a fifth of the country's economy. The head of athletics world governing body Sebastian Coe says the decision to pay gold medalists at the Paris Olympics prize money is a pivotal moment. For the first time in the history of the Games, winners will receive $50,000 from World Athletics. Mr. Coe said the move matched changing times. Others said the move undercut the Games as a nominally amateur event. But Mr. Coe said the athletes were already being paid.
This prize money for an Olympic Games gold medal is not to overshadow the Olympic Games. We recognise that an Olympic athlete winning an Olympic title is likely to receive monies from a number of sources. This is a modest contribution in addition to that.
India's Supreme Court has reprimanded the drugs regulator in the state of Uttarakhand for failing to take action against a popular religious guru promoting traditional medicine. The court had ordered Baba Ramdev's company to stop advertising its products as cures for chronic diseases such as diabetes and asthma. Ramdev is one of what are called yoga gurus offering Ayurvedic alternative medicine on TV shows. In the past, he's appeared with top ministers and leaders of the governing BJP party. BBC News.
The WORT Board of Directors will hold its regularly scheduled meeting on Wednesday, April 17th at 6 p.m. in person at the station, 118 South Bedford Street. The public is welcome to attend. Meeting attendance is also available via Zoom. For information on how to attend this meeting virtually, please email president at wortfm.org.
6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Public Affair. It's Wednesday, April 10th. That means you've got me. I'm your host, Carousel Baird, and this is my final A Public Affair Wednesday after 10 and a half years. So exciting. And of course, I have the future Public Affair Wednesday host returning to her slot. Ali is joining us today, but we'll talk about that later or maybe never. I don't know. Anyhow, welcome y'all joining me. It's been an honor. So exciting. And this is really going to be such a fun show because this show is just a bunch of fabulous local elected women talking about being local elected women. And you all get to listen in. Really fun. Many of my favorite people are here today. So we're going to start here in the studio is Ali Muldrow, who is a Madison School Board member, former board president. Hello, Ali.
Hey, Carousel. Thanks for having me.
The voice of calm and mellow. I love that you and I have shows back and forth. I'm like, hi, everybody, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, hello. Let's all practice our Ali voice. Hello, everyone.
It's you know, it's distinct, I guess.
Can you try and do the carousel voice?
I don't feel like I can hit your energy level. I feel like you're a different frequency than me. You vibrate a little bigger.
Turn your radio down a little bit when Carousel is talking and turn it up to get the smoothness when Ali is talking. I like it. All right. And we also have joining us today, Annalise Eicher. Hello, Annalise.
Hi, and I will absolutely concur on the different vibes having been on with both of you, and I love them equally.
It's hysterical, yes, I do too. And Annalise is current county board supervisor, former county board chair. Chair, I got to work with you, my favorite chair, I'm going to say it out loud. You know, I don't need to kiss up anymore, I was saying, because I'm not on the county board. So I can just say it legitimately. My favorite chair, Annalise Eicher, is here. Hooray. And in a few minutes, we're going to have Jenny Dye joining us, also a former county board supervisor. So it's going to be great. So I really want to start talking about politics, local elected politics. Do you love it? Do you love it most of the time and hate it once in a while? I mean, the strange thing was I was there for 16 years. I loved it when I was there. I was like, I don't think I can go. This is so great. This is so meaningful. It is such an honor. I love it. And when I walked away, I was like, oh my God, that was exhausting. I didn't realize how exhausting it was. And I'm not sure I love it so much anymore. Okay, so there's the lovely intro. How do you feel about local government? Annalise, I want to start with you.
Oh my gosh. So, well, first of all, I loved serving with you. And I think what was energizing about the work and what I still find energizing in local government is when we're able to work together, when we're able to dialogue, when we're actually able to be honest about where we're coming from and where we want to go. I think a lot of us in Dane County, City Madison, you know, we all have a lot of the same end goals, but we also have so many different ways of, you know, of getting there. And so, you know, when you have folks who, you know, prioritize that collaborative nature and prioritize that dialogue and that respect, government works really, really well. And it also makes it a great experience, not just for the folks in public office, but the folks we represent as well, and the folks who work in, who work as county workers, as city workers, as member, as folks who work in our school districts. That is the kind of stuff that works. But I will absolutely second the exhaustion. I served on the county board from 2010 to 2012 with you.
Yeah.
I was 22. I was like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, the whole deal. I mean, still very much am. But when I finished those 2 years, even as a young person, I was like, oh, wow, I was so exhausted all the time. It was so much work. And I don't know that everyone totally understands the work that we do as local elected officials. And whether that's understanding or appreciating. I absolutely understand the exhaustion. But I also love local government so much that I came back and I've been here.
Yeah, you left and you came back.
The difference that we're able to make when we're, mm-hmm. Firing on all cylinders and working in a collaborative, communicative nature, like there is nothing that we can't do. Unless we're prohibited by the state legislature from doing it, but
but that's not the point. But within our realm, we can achieve it. Because so many times in politics, you feel like you're banging your head against the wall. And I feel like what made me, everyone has to sort of figure out how they're successful. And I feel like, Annalise, you're talking about the collaboration and the working together. And sort of what made me feel successful is, it fit my personality that I could bang my head against the wall, be overwhelmed, cry. I know I've cried to all three of you. We're going to introduce Jenny in a second, but I have cried to all three of you. But there's something about I fall asleep and I wake up in the morning and I'm like, all right, let's go. Like I just, there's, for me, it was sort of the Energizer Bunny of like, I'm back and here I am. And woo, that was a mess. It's like amnesia or something. You just keep going.
Ali. You're built different.
Yeah.
I also want to say, and I think this is absolutely something the four of us can talk about today, but like not just the exhaustion from being a smart, active person involved in local government, but also the added layer of being a woman in these spaces much of our Madison and Dane County, we've done a lot to diversify, but we are still very driven by the same group of all white men, I'll say it.
There's so much sexism. Oh, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
And Ali, I wanted to get your thoughts of like, what do you love about politics? How do you keep going and waking up in the morning when you have those moments that knock you down?
I think because I started my career in politics really as an activist and an organizer. And I think the wall that I was kind of hitting my head against was local elected officials who identified as progressive, who identified as Democratic, who identified as liberal, and yet were producing these incredibly racist outcomes. And, I think it was my part of what I love about politics is like the if you can't beat them, join them dynamic is a real part of it. Is you can if you can't make material change by talking to your elected officials, you can become one. And so I had been advocating for certain changes in relationship to our school district. My entire adult life. I went to school here. I grew up in this community. I love this community with my whole heart.
Your life as a child as well as a student there.
Yeah. So as a young person, and the most effective way I've been able to create material change is on the board. That being said, being a local elected really is a reality check. Everybody thinks you know exactly how to do it until you're doing it. And I was vetted multiple times for hundreds of hours. And you know what? Nobody ever asked me. I was elected in 2019. Not a single person ever said, hey, Ali, what would you do if a global pandemic happened and you had to close schools for around a year? Right. So it was like my elected my elected reality has been truly humbling and has forced me to fall in love with learning from this vantage point. And so I do really like what I'm able to do as a board member. I really like the boards that I've gotten to be a part of and gotten to work with. I love that I was a part of the first board that was all women in this state. And so I think there's a lot to be gained from engaging politically and running for office.
Well, I love that you talk about the perspective, right? When you, that's true for anything, no matter what you want to do. Oh, sure, I can just paint my bedroom. That's no problem. I want to paint it. Oh, wait, I can't just buy the paint. I mean, there's all these steps to it. There's all these. So everyone's like, oh, I can be an elected official. It's like, oh, can you? I mean, there's, it's not as easy as you think. And what frustrates me is if I say to someone, I bought some paint and I thought I could paint my wall, they'd be like, Carousel, you don't know how to paint. You got to figure this out a little bit and you got to save time and put down the drop cloth. Oh, I'd be the one with paint like all over my clothing because I don't know, didn't think about these things. And people are like, uh-huh. But then when I say, oh, I tried to pass this law in the legislature, and they're like, well, why didn't you? And I'm like, wait a second. Why do you think these things are complicated? But you don't think this is complicated? I don't know how people forget that, but they do. And that brings us to our third fabulous guest. Hello, Jenny Dye, former County Board Supervisor, former Chair of the Finance Committee, one of the leaders during my time on the County Board that not just taught me, but led with, you know, the SHINE campaign of when you stand up, you don't just say, this is what I'm working on, but every time you figure out how to work in. And thank you, Jenny Dye, for leading this with me or bringing this perspective. And to make the, if you can't stand up and also give a shout out to someone, maybe you should sit down for a second. That was what I took away from, that is one of the things that Jenny Dye taught me. Hello, Jenny.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. So what are your thoughts on, especially that you are, you know, now at the state level, and we're not talking about our day jobs here. We're just talking about our lovely time on local electeds. But, you know, you can see, you've seen the difference firsthand of, you know, being on the county board and then working on the state level. And talk to me about your love. I feel like you do have love for local electeds.
I do. I do really love local government. It is such a special place in terms of politics because it is a place where the things that you talk about, you can really see an immediate and tangible impact on people's lives in the way that some of the really important, but, you know, more 10,000 feet conversations that happen in Washington, D.C., people don't necessarily feel the impact of that happening in their lives the next week. Sometimes they do, but not with all of those decisions. But, you know, when you're talking about local government, it is people in your neighborhood who are able to actually show up right there at your meeting, talk to you about the decisions that you're making and how that's going to impact you. And I will also say it is a place where serving on the Dean County Board, when I was there, we had a strong progressive majority, but we also had some strong conservatives. And at the end of the day, I could work collaboratively on issues with almost everybody, no matter what their personal politics were, because the issues facing local government are not always, you know, Democratic, Republican, partisan issues. They are, how are we going to make our community better issues? And people take off their partisan hat and roll up their sleeves and get to work. I think the truth is that actually at the state level and at the national level, a lot of the issues that we deal with for all of the people who live in our communities, all of the voters, are also not Democratic or Republican issues.
Right.
They are community issues, but it is way harder sometimes to get people to take that partisan hat off, roll up their sleeves, and try to figure out how do we get something good done here for the people that we serve. That's one of the reasons that I continue to love working for Governor Evers, because that is the kind of leader that he is, where he is interested in getting good things done for the state that he loves.
That's an anomaly on the state level. Yeah. Well, I want to sort of, I feel like we've all touched a little bit on kindness and collaboration. And so this was, I think this is a story I've told everyone here, although I'm sure the three of you don't remember it. But I think this was my second year on the county board, and Scott McDonald was chair. And I think Scott McDonald is a fabulous chair, and I think he does a fabulous job as our county clerk. I think we are so, so lucky to have him. And Scott, of course, was, as county board chair, trying to deal with everyone during budget season wanting things. And Scott said something to me that has still stuck with me, which was he was being very frank and honest. And he pretty much said to me, I'm not going to give you what you want in the budget because I don't have to give it to you. There's not enough money to go around. And there's some people that if I don't give them what they want, I'm not going to get their collaboration. And I'm not trying to say it was a quid pro quo. Let's not make it like that. But it was, he was basically telling me I'm, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and I'm not a squeaky wheel, and he knows I'm going to do the right thing. And it was so fascinating because he was telling the truth, and he was trying to be frank with me of like, this is what I've got, and you're just not making the cut, Carousel. That's just not how it is. And the impact it had on me, because I was like, wait, shouldn't I be rewarded for being a team player? And the trickiness of that, because you can't win on the county board or any other elected body without 50% plus one. You can't. And of course, it's good sometimes to stand on issue. It's we've all gone down with the ship proudly. Nothing wrong with that. But at some point, you really do want to get legislation done. And so I'm not sure where I'm entirely going with this story, but sort of want to get people's thoughts about kindness and collaboration in politics. And I feel like it's so much work. It's a lot of work to get people to care about kindness and collaboration. It doesn't come naturally.
I think that that's such an important thing to talk about, and partially because I spend a lot of time talking about abortion. And I have been amazed at how often abortion access advocates want to honor the faith of people who are really against abortion access. I've been so amazed often how there's these kind of one-way streets of like, I want to hear you, I want to honor what you think, I want to uplift your voice, and that isn't returned.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some real complexity in like, hey, I want to show up and make sure that I'm hearing from everybody, and I'm available to honor perspectives that are very different than my own. And yet, when those perspectives are not available to honor your perspective, it does create this dynamic where you're like, no, I'm going to have to dig my heels in somewhere, or I'm going to get taken for a ride, and I'm going to lose all my rights. And there's some real, I think, boundaries that have to be realized in how you do this work in order to maintain your integrity. And I do think those boundaries are picking your battles and are how you show up for people who think differently than you. But I do think you have to be mindful of how people show up who think, show up for you when you're the person who's thinking differently than them.
But I think what you're saying is totally right. And I think it maybe speaks to the need for longevity. Okay, you get there, you want to be collaborative, but you need leadership that pushes that. And I think when I saw collaboration succeed on the county board, it's when I saw Jenny Dye as chair of the finance committee leading with collaboration, and Annalise Eicher as chair of the county board leading with collaboration. Like I think there's an aspect of it of you have to, maybe it's naive to be collaborative until you actually get to leadership and you can change the system. But how much can you? Jenny Annalise, who wants to chime in.
Well, so my approach to chairing the board, and I think I made this ask of you, Carousel, but it was an ask I made of everyone. It's, I was constantly checking in with people. And because I felt that was my part of my job as the, the leader. It's like, what are you interested in? What are you working on? What are your goals? What are you, and then being able to connect folks and say, hey, this person is also interested in this. Let's find a way to yes, and let's work together on that. and like, hey, I know we all want to get to here, but we have issues with this, this, and this from a staff perspective, from another supervisor's perspective. Why don't we all be in the same room and we can work this out and find our way to yes so that we get a good piece of legislation that is reflective of all of us and not just one person and their goals that they get to stand on, but it's really of all of us. And then let's also figure out how that impacts all of the areas that we all serve and all of the people that we serve, because some things are absolutely going to impact one area over another, you know, particularly in county government. But at the same time, there's a lot of issues that are similar, that are the same issue across the county, that they just look different in other communities. And you know, being able to keep that openness and being able to keep that perspective. And also, I mean, I don't want to say like forcing people to work together, but, you know, making that ask in a respectful manner and hoping that that's, you know, reciprocated, that like, yeah, we're going to show up in a similar manner and we might disagree, but we're ultimately going to get somewhere that that is going to be the best, you know, the best thing for us and for who we're representing. And well, that wasn't always the most well received.
No, I mean that,
and I got a lot of criticism for that.
That's what I think is sort of interesting, is that one, I think that, you know, of course I'm going to make a generalization, but I think that's something that women in leadership bring, is the sense of collaboration, is the sense of working together, right? It makes me think of like my high school and elementary and middle school kids that work on group projects. And, you know, it's sort of, because if I feel like if you make that ask that you were talking about, Annalise, as a non-leader on the county board, a member, a legitimate elected official, you make that ask, you might get a yes, or you might get a no, I'm not sitting with you, this is my idea and I'm running with it. And I would also think, Annalise, even when you make the ask, it's better from a leader. But as you were saying, you got pushback. I'm sure there were people that were like, no, I'm not going to do it, Annalise. And the pushback. And Jenny, I wanted to sort of get your thoughts on this too, because I think that you worked really hard to be collaborative and to shine on others. And, you know, it stood out, unfortunately, and on a good sense, it stood out. On a sad sense, it stood out. It was an anomaly. Want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I will just say one of my the biggest compliments I've ever gotten in my life was when I resigned from the board to take my current role. And you actually stood up, Carousel, on the board floor and talked about like me being sort of like Shine Theory embodied. And that was a huge compliment, because it really is something that I find to be like core to my leadership style. And I think from where I come from, when we have to make decisions, I want to do it in a consensus-based way. And I think, though, there is a limit to that. And it's like finding consensus where we can, to Ali's point of there are boundaries. Like there are values that I hold. There are values that when I was on the county board, the community that I represented expected. And so there are those boundaries that you have to respect. But in building consensus, to me, the most important thing is, it's not just that you're sitting at a local government body or whatever your government body is debating each other. It's that you're listening to each other and finding where that overlap is, that you can pull in each other's ideas and maybe in the end build an even better one.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that during the time that I was on the county board that we really succeeded in. And I think that doing that also is the opportunity to embody Shine Theory, which for folks who aren't
tell us what Shine Theory is.
Is sort of the idea that like we all do better when we all do better, and that like I don't shine if you don't shine. And so you getting elevated and your ideas succeeding is actually great for me, and I want to help you do that. And when I am succeeding, you're going to help me do that. And it is sort of the antithesis of this idea that we're competing against each other for leadership. Instead, we can all be lifting each other up.
It's, I mean, Okay, I just want to be on an elected body with just the four of us. Maybe we could have some votes on who else might be able to join us. But think of all the things that we could do. Okay, well, since that's not going to happen. So here's another thing that I think particularly Jenny brought to me, which I'm going to 1,000% confess, when I was elected to the county board, I had never watched Parks and Recreation. Never watched it. And I'm pretty sure Jenny Dye once in a while would make some like Leslie Knope statement. And I'm like, I don't know who this Leslie Knope. She on the city council? Who is this Leslie? Who is this? I hear her name once in a while. I don't know who this is. Okay. So have we all watched Parks and Recs? Ali, have you watched Parks and Recs?
I'm a huge fan. I mean, every week during public comment, I say to myself, people are not yelling at me. They are caring loudly. They are caring loudly. Yes. It is like one of the repeats in my mind from that show. It's like, people care loudly. You are not being yelled at.
Well, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear everyone's sort of like, do you feel sometimes that when you watch that show, you're like, okay, this isn't actually a comedy. It's just a recording of what actually happened to me in real life. Like, not all the time, but once in a while, I'm like, yep, I heard that. Like, anybody have any good Leslie Knope story they need to share? I mean, Ali, I like the one you just shared. Or do you think about Parks and Rec sometimes? It's been a while, but maybe a decade ago you thought about it.
I absolutely do. And I think for me, one of the things that I think about the most maybe in my current job is that there's something that Leslie says that's like, there's nothing we can't accomplish if we don't ever sleep, shirk all our other responsibilities in life, and like work really hard on this.
Right.
And that energy that Leslie Knope brought to her work is one that I find myself bringing to my work a lot. I have done some personal work on setting boundaries so that as I joined the call, I heard you all talking about how exhausting public service can sometimes be.
Yes.
Because it can be. There are so many good things to be done for our community that the list is endless. And if you made a list of everything you wanted to get done during a term on the county board or whatever you got elected to, you could work on it night and day, 24 hours every day, and still not accomplish everything because there are so many great things that we could do together. And you have to find a way to make that space for yourself to be a person. And, you know, in a lot of these local elected offices, it's a part-time job. So you also are fitting in not just your personal life, your family life, but your professional life, in addition to that laundry list of things that you're going to do while you're never sleeping.
Right, right.
So I, the caring loudly is something that I carry with me. And to Jenny's point about, so you know, the doing all of the things, and the boundary setting, that is absolutely something that I think have worked out and had to learn, right? Because I would absolutely spend every moment of every day doing all of the things, but that's not helpful and that's not healthy. But I also, you know, I love Parks and Rec. I also feel like sometimes we live episodes of Veep on a local level.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that. But I also have the incredible honor of being on the county's Parks Commission.
So it's even more Parks and Rec. I mean, it's too real.
It is. And, you know, I there's so much of that show that I think people relate to. And that is so, you know, so real about, you know, just the administrative stuff and the people that you come up to and the passion that people show up to for their issues, for their parks, for, you know, the animals and the bodies of water. And, you know, anytime we have a Parks Commission meeting where there is a body of water, I make it a point to go in the body of water. So I'm hopefully bringing
How do you get in the, okay, with, I mean, with your kayak or something, right?
No, I just physically go in.
I love you, Annalise. That's awesome.
Whatever I'm wearing.
Awesome. Sure. Why not?
The pants go in. I wore a suit to a meeting last August when we had those like crazy heat waves. we met at a park with a beach, and I was like, cool, I'm wearing a swimsuit and I'm going swimming before we actually have our meeting. So well, I also try to bring that sort of nope energy to our county parks commission.
I was just going to say, Annalise, I feel like for the Parks and Recs fans who are listening, they will understand when I say you are a poetic and noble land mermaid, it sounds like.
I get that reference. That is fantastic. Oh, that is so well fantastic. So, okay, it's just good to put the little Leslie Knope spirit here, right? I keep like, this is my final show. Wart loves me so much. Leslie Knope's going to pop up in the middle of the show any second now. She isn't, unfortunately, but, you know, maybe she will. Okay. So, Ali, because you're here, I want to particularly talk to you about the school board. Because I think the school board is the hardest elected office in maybe ever. Probably the president's really hard too. But I think school board is really, really hard. And how do you keep going?
I mean, I think people have told me that it's a really hard job, that it's a really thankless job. I think it's the only elected position where sometimes part of your job is reading to kindergartners. You know, like there are these moments in that job that are so incredibly...
The perks.
Yeah, they're so incredibly sweet. And I don't think there's any more important elected office. Mm-hmm. Like, hard or not, I think if you have the ability to shape the learning, the understanding, the critical thinking of 25,000 children, the ripple effect that has in terms of our future is profound. And so it's really exciting to get to be in a position to work in service of our families and our young people. And I started in education, and I think schools are kind of the space where you go, hey, if we want our entire community to be more accepting of LGBTQ folks, what can we do at school? If we want our entire community to better understand local government, how do we make sure that gets into the curriculum? If we want a better world, it starts with how we treat each other's children. And so I really love being on the school board. I think that one of the things that makes the school board, you know, both really hard and, you know, a little bit easier than the other bodies is that there is seven of us. And so it is a really intimate group of people that get to know one another pretty well and get to work together consistently and can build the kinds of relationships.
You can't ignore each other when there's seven people.
No, you can. You have to be willing to be on the same page of the book. And so I think that that is a huge benefit in terms of being of service on the school board. I think that what makes it complicated are the stakes are high. If you get it wrong, you're getting it wrong for people's kids. If you get it wrong, you're getting it wrong for our educators. You're getting it wrong for the families of this community. And that's, you know, the days when we get it wrong, people let us know, you know, they care loudly. And when it's your kid, the loud can get pretty loud. And as a parent, I really identify with that. I was board president when I was pregnant, and, you know, the first year of my youngest kid's life. And so being in a leadership role on the board at that time during the pandemic while I was pregnant, I really had to rely on the other six people on the board to support me as a leader, to work well with one another, to show up for me as a person. I'll always treasure, like, my vice presidents at the time were, you know, Maya Pearson and Savian Castro, and they were absolutely amazing to work with and completely understood kind of the limits of where I was at in my pregnancy, or the fact that I wasn't
the
like
fact
sleeping,
that you, did all of that,
you know,
that's crazy.
They were
that's
great.
Crazy. Well, I want to talk about a little bit the level of sexism that happens. And I think school boards, we've seen, you know, people getting angry. Certainly COVID made it a national viewing of people yelling at school boards. But I think people yell at us all the time. People have yelled at me. I was threatened. There was really only one or maybe two times where I'm like, okay, no, this is a real, real threat. Like, I really do think you're gonna take a swing at me. This is scaring me a little. And I feel lucky that was only one or two times in 16 years. But I think there's this level of sexism where it's easier to challenge a woman that you disagree with. It's easier to bully a woman that you disagree with. It's easier to threaten a woman that you disagree with. Not that men don't get it, not trying to take away from them, but I think people are more inclined, or they don't check themselves when they have the desire to bully you and yell at you and be mean to you. There's no check or fear back if it's a woman. And I want to sort of get people's take on that, of the impact that has on women being in leadership, staying in leadership. How does that play? Or when you think of sexism, do you think of so many, there's so many other pieces of sexism too.
There so are. And I think, you know, it's the sexism, and it's the misogyny and the internalized misogyny by other women. And so it's hard. Especially if you're, it feels a little bit like a betrayal if it's coming from, you know, another woman, right? Like, but it also has, I think, not just a ripple effect on women in leadership, but also in, you know, in women in general. I mean, we at one point had, the majority plus of women on the county board.
Just over the edge, but yes,
yeah,
finally.
Just over the edge. We were, you know, creeping towards parity for years. And, you know, when I talk to, you know, women who have left the board, you know, particularly this term, it has been so much of the sexism, the racism, the misogyny from their, you know, not just, you know, the public, but also their colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, for us as leaders, you know, how are we helping to combat that? How are we, you know, how are we educating? How are we showing up for, you know, ourselves and others? But, you know, I think it's also not just on us to do that. You know, we have to have allies in men and in others, and it has to be, and it can't be fake. It can't be like, you know, of pure self-interest, which I think, you know, I think we've, you know, seen a lot of, but it's, you know, truly showing up for women and for, you know, women of color in a way that's honest and true, and not, you know, using them in a way to, you know, further your own agenda.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I mean, that at least has been my experience. And it's disappointing because these are, you know, men, you know, a lot of times that we agree with.
Right.
And that we share values with, but there's a very distinct departure in those values when it comes to the value of women and the work of women. And some men get it and some men don't. And some women get it and some women don't.
Yes. Jenny, I wanted to get your thoughts on that, of the challenges of sort of women in leadership.
Yeah, I mean, I think one example that I always think of when it comes to this issue was during my very first term on the county board. I got appointed to a committee. It's a committee that had, like, everybody else on the committee had been serving on it for a while. It was external citizen members with one county board supervisor. That person had left, so I was going to be the only new person. And I was also the only woman who was on the body. And I remember just being absolutely terrifyingly nervous to go to this first meeting because I was brand new, because I was the only woman. I spent hours and hours and hours doing all of this work to, like, know everything that had ever happened on this committee before. None of it actually came up in the meeting. Like, I didn't need to know half of it for this
particular
meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But during the meeting, I was sitting in one of those office chairs that has, like, the lever to, you know, make it go higher or lower, and it was broken. And so during the meeting, the chair kept sinking down and down and down until, like, at the end of it, I literally felt like it was like an episode of Parks and Rec where, like,
yes,
you know, my little chin would be, like, on the table and I'd be like, hey guys, I've got something
let
to
me
say.
Let me in.
And honestly, they were all lovely. And I did that to myself to some degree, because I anticipated it. And so I bring that up because it is an issue, like, even if there's not a specific instance of sexism, which is absolutely something that happens when you are serving as an elected official or in any other part of the world as a woman, it's gonna, it happens. So I want to be clear, I'm not discounting that sexism is something that people experience, but even when it's not something you're experiencing, it is something that you are bracing for and preparing for and making sure that, you know, you're ready to be twice as prepared so people respect you the same amount. And that to me was just like, it really clicked for me how much I was feeling that in that meeting.
Mm. Yeah. Because of, I mean, we've been trained to expect that because you didn't actually need to prepare so much for that meeting, but you never know the next meeting you then will be underprepared and they'll expect something from you. Right, right. And I mean, Ali, as you know, the woman of color that is part of this, the level of racism that I know that you experienced that, right? I'm blind too. I try to be as the best I can and I fail on a regular basis because I grew up as a white woman. Can't change that. But the sexism that you get, the racism that you get, how does that impact?
I think those things for me have been far more pronounced when I'm campaigning than when I am serving. You know, I think that there are moments when you're serving where I've been really surprised by like kind of the mansplaining of things to me, or the talking down or kind of dismissive approaches to, you know, me as a thoughtful member of the body of governance. But the thing that I think really stood out for me in campaigning was kind of questions about who I am as a parent. And I didn't think that men would get those same questions, you know, so I'd be at a forum and folks would be like, well, where are your kids this evening? You know, or what are your kids going to be doing while you're serving? Or this concern that because I wanted this leadership role was, you know, not taking responsibility for the duties I should have as a mother and as a wife, and that I was, you know, blowing off this other very important aspect of my life in order to do this work. And I just don't think there's that same attitude. I think racism as part of something that has shaped my reality on the board has created a different level of hostility towards me, has made people, when they disagree with me about something that is specific to the board, you know, using references to slavery as a way to insult me, using references to incarceration as a way to insult me, making me out to be scary or belligerent or lack decorum, kind of stereotyping me in ways that are really inappropriate, comparing me to Donald Trump. Those kinds of things, I think, have been more pronounced, in part because I'm Black and in part because I am a Black woman. Mm-hmm. And I think the intersection of sexism and racism, and I'm also somebody who openly identifies as a member of the LGBTQ community. And so I think, you know, you take your pick. If you hate it, I am it. And I think that means that people feel entitled to belittle me in different ways.
Well, I think sometimes what drives me crazy is when every once in a while I feel like I can see the sexism. Like you can see this quality in this person you disregard because they're a white male and you see the other things that shine about them. But this quality in the woman, you're like, this is why I'm not a supporter. I mean, I don't know if I'll ever get over the defeat of Hillary Clinton in my entire life. I don't think I ever will. And the impact that it had on society, first of all, because of the election of Donald Trump, is insane. But the way that it made me feel and the double standards that were so strong, and
the excuses.
What's
like
that?
Not just the double standards, but the excuses.
Yes.
That folks are willing to make for men that they are not willing to make for women. The number of times he's going to change.
Or it doesn't matter. I mean, Paul Soglin was mayor of Madison for a long time. And I would bet that there might be no one that knows more about Madison than Paul Soglin. I genuinely mean that. He is knowledgeable. He cares about this city. All of these things. He was not an easygoing human being. And when people criticize female leaders for not being easygoing, I'm like, I honestly say that in my dream world, when I was in my political life, My dream world was, I want to be Paul Soglin. I want to be as obnoxious. I mean, I don't really want to be, but I want to be as obnoxious in a meeting as right as Paul Soglin often was, but as dismissive of everyone else. And I want you all to still love me. And I don't think that could ever happen.
No.
No one's going to join in the comment here, perhaps.
I mean, it would be insane, like, just even thinking about that, like, to Jenny's point earlier about, like, the over-preparing and, like, mm-hmm. and having to be, like, having to meet so many different standards that, like, people expect in order for us to do our jobs. The same job that we were, you know, all elected to do, that everyone said we were all qualified to do, like, just the different standards and the expectations and the excuses. I mean, that also, talking about exhausting. I mean, yes, ugh, I let alone being able to do good work, let alone lead it.
Well, and I think also sometimes for women, there's like no matter what your answer is, it's the wrong answer. Like right. Ali was talking about people holding her accountable for like, where are your kids while you're doing this public service. But when I initially ran for office, I got a lot of flack in my district for not having kids. Like, well, do you really care about this community? Jeez. Do you know this community in the same way? Oh my God. Because you don't have kids. And if I had kids, they would have asked me the exact same questions right. that they were asking Ali. And, you know, on the one hand, like, I get as a human, like, why people are interested to understand a candidate's life. Because when you're on the ballot, you know, your whole persona is on the ballot. But on the other hand, like, we don't hold men to that same standard about what the expectation is for the answers on what their life looks like. Mm-hmm. And it is just like, as a woman, that's one example. There's like the monologue from Barbie that has been going around that is like, no matter, you know, the same sort of thing. Like, you can't be this, but also you can't be the opposite. Like, you can't win. And that is a challenge that I think women on both sides of the aisle or in nonpartisan office face.
So there was a candidate, an individual that represented me actually on the Madison City Council. I can't remember when, a couple of terms ago. And I think I agreed with this person. I thought they tried to do their best and cared about the city and deserved to be on the city council. Absolutely. And campaigned and worked hard for their seat. But one of their campaign issues was, or not issues, one of their campaign sort of slogans or what have you was, I'm a stay-at-home dad. And he talked about how, and people loved that. They were like, that is so thoughtful. And I remember going to him and I'm like, stop it. I want you to stop using stay-at-home dad as a reason why people should love you. And I'm like, I get it. It's not your fault individually. But if I were to say that, they'd be like, you're a stay-at-home mom. Do you work? And then if I wasn't a stay-at-home mom, it was, do you have time for this? I'm like, and it was this struggle where he really just didn't see it. And again, I agreed with him on many things and he did a good job on the city council, not any of that. But the fact that he was like, I'm a stay-at-home dad, and he used that as his integrity and like this kind of person that he was, and people loved it. People loved it. It drove me batty. Ugh.
It's kind of mind blowing, you know, that those dynamics, that when men are seen parenting, it becomes an asset to their campaign. Oh my gosh, he's pushing his kid on the swing. Like, that's so cool. Like, and those same exact ideas or dynamics all become things that women have to explain and justify. And, you know, it's just the difference in attitude towards yes. parents.
And still doing it like today. I mean, I was when I ran for assembly 2 years ago, someone said, oh, well, she can't represent our schools because she doesn't have kids. I don't, but I coach in my school district.
You've been giving me very good advice about my kids where I'm like, oh my God, you're like, they're fine. And you were right, by the way, as a coach.
You have amazing. As a coach. You both have amazing children. But I think the other thing too about, you know, women in leadership in local government is that we have made it more acceptable for children to be present.
Oh, yes.
and participating.
To breastfeed on the county board floor. Yes, indeed.
To breastfeed on the county board floor.
At so many meetings.
Uh-huh.
To see your children grow up at our board meetings, to see them, you know, engage and to ask questions. And it's more welcomed by, you know, the sort of collaborative communities that, you know, we build as women. And it's, I think kids at meetings is great.
It is great. So we have like 3 minutes left. I don't even know how to wrap up this conversation. I mean,
I have something for you, Kirsten.
Oh, you do.
So
Leslie, nope.
So with five minutes left here, I want to say thank you for your 10 and a half years of doing this. You have provided such an important perspective in your hosting of this show, and the way that you have brought new voices and new people and folks that we don't necessarily always hear from, and just your dedication to that has been awesome. And I say that as somebody who has popped on your show to talk about everything from student loan debt to voting to abortion to local government. Your dedication and commitment to this has been absolutely incredible, and I'm so grateful that you were able to have this spot and this space at Wart to do this. So thank you not only to you, but also to Wart for seeing you and giving you this opportunity. And you know, I know she just took a minute to talk about that, but I would love to hear any parting thoughts, you know, from you. And I can't wait to see what's next from you in all senses of the word of what's next for you. Because you're that special to, you know, to me and I think our whole community.
That's really, really lovely. Well, I mean, first of all, Annalise and Jenny, particularly the two of you, when I was like, oh my God, our show fell apart. Ali and I will know. You spend all week, you spend time, we got this guest, we got that, but then it falls apart. I'm like, oh, well, Annalise will come. Jenny will come. Melissa Agard will come. There's a reason that Annalise, Jenny, and Ali are part of the final show, because I'm like, these people were the anchors to this show. Something's going on. Jenny, come talk about abortion right now. And Jenny's like, uh-huh. I will. And sometimes you were like, I'm sort of camp, but I'll move things around. I'm like, come on, Jenny, you must. I was a little strong-willed with all three of you, because I'm like, please don't make me be here by myself. And so I so appreciate the voice and all three of your voices, all three of your perspectives. We agree, but we agree in different ways. That all three of you had made me think, have made me challenge myself, have comforted me, told me I'm okay, told me I'm not okay, all of those things that, you know, these are what colleagues are for. And what I want to do next, I'll say very quickly, is write. I want to write. I had a monologue in the Monologue Festival last year. It was an honor. I'm working on a play. It's called The Dane County Jail. Shocking. it is a play that I've been writing. It probably will never get written, but it's super fun and I want more time to write a play called The Dane County Jail. It's super fun. Jenny.
Well, I will just echo Annalise in congratulating you and thanking you for all of your time and effort here on WORT, but also for our community over the years. And I think, you know, although some of the things that we talked about today were the challenges in serving in local office, I hope what people take away from this conversation and also from your time hosting this show is how important it is to pay attention to local issues and be engaged and involved, and how rewarding it is, and that you build amazing relationships with great people throughout the community and do good things for the place that you live and the people who are your neighbors. And I think that's what the core of the conversation today really was about.
Yes.
As it has been, as you have brought folks together over the years. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Jenny. Ali, you want to say any final words?
You get like 10 seconds. All of that. And I do just want to say, I think, Carousel, it's been such a gift to get to be on a public affair with you, to get to work with you. And I hope you know that you're not just going to like get away. That we will be, you know, interviewing you and hearing from you. And this community needs your voice, you know, in a million different ways. And I'm so excited to read what you write.
You have read some of the things that I write, which I appreciate. And there's still so many important conversations. And I think I will fill in as a sub-host on a regular basis. But yes, it's just, it's been so, so much fun. I want to give a huge thank you to Ollie Muldrow, Jenny Dye, Annalise Eicher for being my friends, for being my allies, for being fabulous community leaders, and for joining me on the show today. And a huge thank you to Jade for producing. A huge thank you to Shali, our news director, Jay for engineering, Mary Jo for staffing the phone, even though I never said the phone number today because I only wanted to hear from the four of us. So I was selfish today. Thank you, WORT, for all that you have given me. It's been a complete honor, and someone will be here again next week, so be sure to turn in. Bye, everybody.
Never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported.
You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded.
Hello, this is Julie Candler with the BBC News. Israel has confirmed that it's killed three adult sons of the Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh with an airstrike in Gaza. It described them as military operatives on their way to carry out terrorist activities. Mr. Haniyeh, who's based in Qatar, said their car was targeted as they visited relatives for Eid al-Fitr, the festival marking the final day of Ramadan. He said some of his grandchildren were also killed. Here's Sebastian Usher.
Hamas says the car that Ismail Haniyeh's sons were travelling in was hit in Ashati camp in Gaza. Mr. Haniyeh heard the news as he was visiting wounded Gazans who'd been taken for treatment to the Qatari capital Doha, which is where the Hamas leader lives. His response was to thank God for the honour bestowed on him with what he called the martyrdom of his children and grandchildren. He also said that the killing